This is InvestTalk, independent thinking, shared success. Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our Monday, November 7th, 2022 edition, and the seasons are changing. I know here it's been nice and rainy over the last 24 hours, and Thanksgiving is a little more than 2 weeks away, and we're dealing with a volatile market and a different market, a market where interest rates are going up, long duration assets are going down, and assets that give you value today are going up. Real assets, hard assets, important assets that run our everyday lives. Times you take them for granted, and I think we have for a long period of time. And that's coming home to roost. And from a high level, that means changes to how you should allocate your funds and the strategies you should employ. And so I'm Justin Klein. I'm here ready to answer your finance and investment questions and help you create some confidence in your investment strategy to give you a direction, especially when most everyday investors don't have a direction. You hear about company here, you read about a company there, you talk to your brother about, you know, the company that is doing really well in their portfolio. You see something that Cramer said. Right? These are how most investors get their ideas. And they shoot from the hip. And that's a surefire way to have very middling poor results. And so what I'm here to do is to help you bring a framework to your thinking. A framework that is built on reality, built on data, and weeds out as much emotion as you possibly can, both fear and greed. And fear and greed are simply emotions that emotional beings like humans have. So it's natural. But it doesn't mean you have to be beholden to them. And so when I answer your finance and investment questions, that's what I'm trying to help you do, is to get clarity and make those decisions with sound, down-to-earth rationale. Not pie-in-the-sky hopes and dreams, but realistic expectations. And not get caught up in hype. Not get won over by bells and whistles from Cramer, for example. I want you to be won over by the facts on the ground, on the economy, on a sector level, and a company level. So the phone lines are open, ready to answer your finance and investment questions at 888-99-CHART. And I've got a lot of material to discuss today. One is in regards to a new classification system that Goldman Sachs is trying to put on the crypto universe. And we're going to look at what that means. And I'll give you my take on whether that makes sense or not. Also, other things on the docket, such as the CHIPS Act. I've said this before, the CHIPS Act is, I think, one of the most influential industrial policy steps by the government that the government has taken in a long time. Now, we'll see if I'm correct. We'll see how much impact that does have over time. But I want to touch on it because I do think it is important. Also, we're in a rising rate environment, and typically rising rates help banks. Why? Because banks borrow short, they lend long, and typically they want to lend at higher rates. It means they earn more interest. But some banks are benefiting more than the others, and we're going to look at which ones those are. And then lastly, there's modern monetary theory, which is kind of something touted by progressives on the left and a way to conduct monetary and fiscal policy. But there's a new theory on the right as well. And it's called the price theory of the fiscal theory of price of the price level. Fiscal theory of the price level, which we're going to get to potentially in a little bit. But those are things that are on the docket for me. I also have some voice bank questions ready to play for you. One in regards to famous investors as well as American Express. So I have all this planned for this episode of Invest Talk. So give me a call at 888-99-CHART. Let's go to Sid in North Carolina.
Hi, Justin. Good evening. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And thank you. And my best wishes to almost complete 50 million podcast listeners. So I'm one of them. Thank you so much for all the help that you are giving us.
No problem. I appreciate it. Hopefully give you some help as well. Now you're looking at Freeport Mac Moran. Do you own it or are you thinking of picking it up?
Yes, I own it. I had picked up somewhere in the range of $32. It's currently at $34. So I'm at a marginal profit. It's less than 1% of my portfolio. But I was just checking some numbers that they have some debt, they have cash flow. I don't know. Should I keep it this for a long term? I'm usually buying or selling for the long term only. I don't do it daily trading. So do you think this is something that we should keep it, or is this a price range we should add, or what should be your opinion? Thank you so much.
Yeah, we like Freeport. It's one of the largest copper miners in the world, about a $50 billion market cap. And you know, their earnings for this year and next year are coming down from the high of 2021 of $3.13, which was a record high. But even $1.72 expected for next year is higher than 2018 levels, which is the previous high of $1.52. So the earnings are still very robust, and you're starting to see some the price of copper in general perk up after having a large pullback on the back of a strong dollar, as well as the weakness caused by the zero COVID policy in China. Remember, China is a big user of copper for all different purposes, but a lot has to do with building real estate, and their real estate market's struggling as well. So I think that's the biggest near-term drag, but you're starting to continue to see a pickup in electric vehicle production, and that takes a lot of copper. Typical EV has about 8 times more copper than a traditional internal combustion engine car. And so there's going to be increasing demand for in that space, as well as solar panels and other type of electrification of our transportation grid, of our energy grid, because copper is a great conductor of electricity, and you know, relatively cheap compared to others. So the demand for copper, we think, will be robust over the long term. So you're starting to see some strength there. Now, we own a different copper miner that we think is better, but Freeport is certainly a very good one. So you can't go too wrong with it as long as copper prices go up, and we are bullish on copper longer term. So I wouldn't be mad about adding to it here. Now we're heading into a break, and I welcome your finance and investment questions right now. Remember, no question is too simple or too complex. You set the agenda. So give me a call on Invest Talk at 888-99-CHART.
Want Why do listener questions make InvestTalk better?
Which of these would you recommend?
Because each caller presents fresh questions in their voice.
I was curious if you still think aluminum has a ways to go from here.
When do I know the right time to take profits?
Should I be looking for an exit? Should I be holding here?
And listeners instinctively realize that InvestTalk uniquely offers a welcome dose of investing satisfaction.
I think you have a terrific show, and I've learned a whole lot.
Hey guys, love your show. I've been listening for several years now, and I've learned a lot.
Justin Klein and Steve Peasley understand what investors need and want.
I would look at it from a tax perspective. If there's no tax implications, move on, find better ways to use that money.
I'm going with the odds. I think a half position now would at least get you in it and get you watching it so you won't lose track of it.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
One of the most rewarding things I do each weekday is host the InvestTalk podcast. I truly enjoy helping investors. And I know that every question counts and every answer I provide will be unbiased. So as long as your questions involve the stock market or general investment topics and definitions, we set no limits. You, the caller, get to chart the course for each InvestTalk podcast. Justin and I are ready. Are you? Call with your questions anytime, day or night, 888-99-CHART.
Now, my main focus today is in regards to Goldman Sachs and their new data service they're rolling out in conjunction with Coinmetrics, as well as MSCI, which is a global index provider. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to set classifications for digital assets, digital coins, tokens, etc., so that institutions as well as individuals can make sense of this new asset class and create a framework for these ecosystems that are easy for people to understand. Now, before this year, during the pandemic, crypto assets exploded to about $3 trillion in value. Now that's down to below $1 trillion, but it's still sizable. And this new service is going to be called Datonomy, which is a kind of a play on words of taxonomy, which is a branch of science that classifies the natural world into different names. But what this is, this is going to be sold as a data feed, a subscription-based data feed that you can subscribe to. And it's going to divide the digital asset world into classes, sectors, and subsectors, depending on how these coins or tokens are used. So it's trying to put some granular data similar to how equities are classified. So you don't just say stocks. Stocks is very broad, right? So, okay, what sector is that stock in? Is it a growth stock? Is it a value stock? Is it large cap? Is it small cap? And as we talked about before, that those classifications and those type of companies with certain features, let's call it, tend to move in similar fashions. Where sometimes small caps outperforming, sometimes large caps outperforming, sometimes it's growth that's leading, sometimes it's value, sometimes certain sectors based on the economic backdrop are outperforming versus others. That's always the case, pretty much, right? That there's some of those trends are always happening, and there's usually fundamental factors for it, whether that's the economic backdrop or interest rates or inflation, and the same can be said in the digital world. So are these assets being used for decentralized finance or the metaverse or smart contract platforms or value transfer tokens? There's different ways for these digital assets to be used. And so maybe you're bullish on value transfer coins, the ability for people to transact with digital currencies. But you're not bullish on the metaverse. Or maybe vice versa. And you're able to now, instead of just betting on crypto in general, you're able to better focus on particular slices of the market. And so this is the next phase of getting the industry lined up so everyone can understand what they're investing in a little bit better. And then different institutions can start to build indices like MSCI that will follow these subsectors of the crypto market. So I think this is actually overall a good thing, because it's always hard to paint the whole sector with a broad brush that everything is great or everything is terrible, because there's always shades of gray in there. And this is more able to put some color to those shades of gray. And I like that trend. Now we're heading to a break. Steve and I are happy to play your voice bank questions, but we love your live calls as well. So give us a call on InvestTalk at 888-99-CHART.
Each day, InvestTalk listeners submit their finance and investment questions via phone or email. Would you like your question to be put near the top of the list? Just take a minute or two to leave a review and rating for InvestTalk at iTunes. And be sure to include a brief question with your iTunes review comments. And of course, your calls are always welcome 24/7. Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Duncan here from New York. Always a pleasure listening to your podcast and getting some good advice. I actually have a question just about your methodology and how you guys invest. As I continue being a student on your podcast, I'm trying to look at other famous investors. I would like to ask, out of these four investors, if you kind of follow their type of investing style. They are John Neff, Peter Lynch, Ben Graham, and Joel Greenblatt. Not sure if any of those people sound familiar, and if you guys relate to any of their type of investing. If not, who else do you guys follow? Looking forward to the answer on the podcast. Have a great night. Bye.
Well, all four of those investors have some positive aspects to the way that we look at individual companies. Things that we like, things that we think are more appropriate for particular sectors. But if I was to pick one of those four, it'd probably be Joel Greenblatt. I think he has the clearest picture of looking at operating profit and more granular data as opposed to just like P ratios and just simply return on equity. So he likes to dig into the details a little bit better look at profitability metrics, return on invested capital, those things. So I would say of those four, I would pick Joel Greenblatt. Now, is that the only way to find winners? No, but it can be a good starting place for your screening process. And you can build from there. And that's something that we've done is just build on what the great investors have done and try to take what works for us. And sometimes what might work for those famous investors may not exactly work for you, either because maybe that puts you into names that are riskier, right? Smaller cap names, maybe you don't want, maybe you're focused a little more on income and that's going to skew your picks as well. So there's a lot of factors that can go into what you should follow. I always use famous investors as a way to learn, as opposed to a way to copy, because there's often aspects that are not talked about completely in their process. And some of it's intuitive, but a lot of it is just learning what things mean, what to look for, what to not be, I guess, duped by. Whether that, like I said, P ratios, I think is one example of ways that people can get misled and duped into thinking something is cheap when it's really just a value trap or something like that. So I like that you're trying to learn from the greats, and you're looking at multiple greats. So I wouldn't say, oh, I'm just going to pick Joel Greenback, because that's not what we've done. But we've, I would say our methodology is most aligned with his. Yeah. Thanks for the call. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278 is how you get through and ask your question on today's show. We have about a half hour left. So if you're going to call, you want to do that right now. Now let's touch a bit on the CHIPS Act, And this is something that's pretty important in my book. And this was passed in August. It's the CHIPS and Science Act of 2022. It provides $52.7 billion for U.S. semiconductor companies to do R&D, manufacturing, and workforce development. So basically training. And so it includes provisions to reinforce the supply chain of U.S. companies and spur innovation. And a lot of that had to do with trying to supplement R&D spending. The CHIPS Act includes a budget of $200 billion for research grants. And so that will sponsor fundamental research for U.S. universities and labs. And that's going to help U.S. chip stocks, chip companies, and basically subsidize their R&D expense. And frankly, that's, I think, a big reason why companies like TSMC, right, Taiwan Semiconductor, has been the leader. They've been able to use their scale to manufacture chips for the likes of NVIDIA, as AMD, and other chip companies. And they've used that, their profits, to invest in R&D and surpassed Intel because of that scale, because of their heft. And this is going to be able to counter that. So our domestic chip companies, think of Intel, Texas Instruments, et cetera. There are many that are going to benefit from this. And I think this is certainly underrated in its full impact. And so when you're looking at the chip space, understand that this is going to be felt many years down the line, 3, 5, 10 years. And so while right now there's a lot of headwinds in the chip space because of a slowing economy, understand that on the other side of this, I think this CHIPS Act is going to have a nice tailwind long-term for our domestic chip industry. So I wanted to highlight that because I know a lot of people are going to think those foreign chip companies are cheap. And in my book, in reality, I think the opposite's true. Thanks for the call. Or thanks for tuning in. This is Invest Talk. So give me a call at 888-99-CHART. Have you ever been to a comedy club show? You know, where they have open mic nights? This encouragement makes it possible for anyone to jump on stage and try their stand-up routine. In its own way, Shopify offers the same opportunity for business people. Shopify is the all-in-one commerce platform that makes it simple for anyone to step up, start up, run, and grow a successful business. Shopify makes it easy to sell to anyone from anywhere. You see, whether your thing is making vintage teas or concocting exotic recipes, you can start selling with Shopify by joining the platform that simplifies commerce. Take a moment and visualize just how easy Shopify can be. With Shopify, you'll create an online store in your vibe. You'll find new customers and then grow the following that keeps your loyal fans coming back to you. Shopify has all the sales channels sorted, so your business keeps growing, from an in-person POS system to an all-in-one e-commerce platform, even across social media platforms like TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram. And thanks to 24/7 support and free libraries full of educational content, Shopify is with you every step of the way. This is how, every minute of every day, new sellers around the world make their first sale with Shopify. And you will too. Sign up for your free trial at shopify.com/invest, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/invest to start selling online today. Shopify.com/invest. There's one thing every successful small business owner knows. Finding and hiring the right people is very important. So they want to be 100% certain that they have access to the best qualified candidates available. That's where LinkedIn Jobs is essential. LinkedIn Jobs helps find the right people for your team faster and for free. It's easy to create a free job post on LinkedIn Jobs. To spread the word that you are hiring, add your job and the purple hashtag hiring frame to your LinkedIn profile. And with LinkedIn Jobs, simple tools like screening questions make it effortless to focus on candidates with just the right skills and experience, so you can quickly prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. This is why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one for delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. Listen, you want to finish the year strong, and adding the right team member, the right hire, might help you do that. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidates you want to talk with faster. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/invest. That's linkedin.com/invest to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Invest Talk. You've got a portfolio to grow and protect, and this is no time to lose focus. So get your finance and investment questions together and call Steve Peasley and Justin Klein. They're ready with their unbiased answers. Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin and Steve, Matt from South Florida calling. Thanks for always having a great show. Calling about American Express, AXP, like Paul. This is a stock that I've looked at for a while for a couple of reasons. PE ratio currently sitting just under 15. Wanted to get your thought on the stock itself, holding it for 10 to 12 years in a non-taxable account. I like the stock anyway, but I also have an additional reason why I think the stock has a potential to really shine over the next 12 to 18 months. If the legislation known as the Credit Card Competition Act were to pass, I give it maybe a 20 or 30% chance of happening. Many consumers holding certain Visa, MasterCard cards would lose all their rewards. And if you know that legislation, would flock to either Discover or Amex. Without getting into a long discussion about the legislation, I think I like the stock anyway, but if you have an external event that has a reasonable probability of happening, like this Credit Card Competition Act, that would drive a ton of consumers currently holding Visa, MasterCard to Amex. Wanted to get your thought on that as well as the stock itself. Thank you.
All right. I'm not familiar with the Credit Card Competition Act, and it's interesting. I'm just reading about it. Yeah, I'd have to dig into the details of it. Now, historically, American Express has been one of the better credit card companies to invest in for a couple of reasons. One is they're a bit diversified, meaning they earn swipe fees just like Visa and MasterCard does, and actually typically higher swipe fees than Visa or MasterCard. But they also are an issuer of credit as well. And so they earn interest income, and they are pretty good underwriters, meaning they don't typically lend to bad borrowers. Typically their users are middle to high income. And so defaults, even in a recession, remain lower than your Discovers of the world or Capital Ones of the world. And therefore, they've been pretty well run in that sense, is that diversification and the fact that they, on both sides of their business, they tend to do better than most. And so the return on equity is long-term very high. About 25% is their average over the past 5 years, which is very robust. So if I'm going to invest in one company in the credit card industry, long-term, it is probably going to be American Express. Now, there is one caveat that has nothing to do with that Credit Card Competition Act. And it's really about crypto and just the move towards moving money directly, whether that's through what the Fed is trying to do and creating a more, you know, paying the bank type of service where you're going straight from your wallet digitally into the bank of the retailer that you're buying something from, as opposed to through an intermediary like Visa or MasterCard or American Express. And I think longer term, probably get there because it benefits the consumer to get rid of the credit card swipe fees. And there are just a lot more ways for that to happen. Think of Venmo and Zelle today. And I see that growing continually. And there could be some major changes, like I said, that the Fed system that is going to be maybe something similar to a CBDC, but more of a just a direct-to-bank type of system. And so that's the biggest risk for me for mainly Visa or MasterCard, because that's all they do. But it's certainly a risk for American Express, because that is a significant portion of their business, are those swipe fees. So that's what makes me hesitate of owning this and just set it and forget it longer term. Could there be some tailwinds from that Credit Card Competition Act if it is passed? Potentially. I haven't looked into it. But that would be my biggest worry about Amex, is just that swipe fees going away. Thanks for the call. Now, my perspective segment is in regards to inflation and breaking down the labor force by the numbers and highlighting the generational characteristics of the labor force, especially in a time where baby boomers are retiring en masse. Now, they are still in the workforce, born between 1946 and 1964. One in four workers in the U.S. right now is a baby boomer, about 41 million total employees. And they're born after World War II, an era of optimism, opportunity, progress, typically grew up in a two-parent household. They prefer face-to-face communication. They're typically fine with technology, but not great. And in the workforce, they're workaholics. They get fulfillment from that work. They like the meetings and they can do remote work, but tend not to have a good work-life balance. And they tend to work where they live. Now, Gen X, they were born between 1965 and 1980, a large part of the workforce. This is the sandwich generation. Gen X turned to be raising kids and also take care of aging parents. So they've got a lot going on. Now, Gen Xers were born in a rapidly changing social climate and economic recession. Right? Think of late 60s, throughout the 70s. And they typically saw both parents working and divorce rates rising. And they emerged when technology was emerging as well. And they typically communicate best over text, email, as well as face-to-face, because they did grow up without technology for the most part. They tend to work independently. They like fewer rules and they favor structure. Now, there are 65 million Gen Xers in the workforce, and they generate 63% of the total income of the country. That's where most of the money is right now, or at least most of the income is. Okay. Now, millennials born between 1981 and 1995, they are the number one generation in the workforce in the US, Canada, and Mexico. And they're aggressive. They want to move up. They want to move forward. They were raised to share more, talk more, and prefer an open, kind of friendly environment. Prefer to communicate over text, email. They're fast learners and very confident, social, open to new ideas. And 21% of millennial workers have switched jobs in the past 12 months. And this is creating a lot of turnover costs for the economy as a whole. They represent 35% of the workforce today, and but they will make up 75% of the workforce by 2025. Because a lot of those boomers moving out and a lot of millennials continue to enter the workforce. Know what happens going forward? A lot of factors that affect this dynamic. And this is something that you're going to really see these trends emerge over the next 5-10 years or so, is millennials will be the ones running the world, because boomers will be fully moved into retirement, and millennials being the largest cohort, they will have the biggest sway on elections, and there'll be more leaders within government as well as companies. But remember, this is net-net going to kind of keep the workforce shrinking overall, and that means higher wages and higher inflation. Now let's go to Dan in San Diego talking about RIG.
Hi, Justin. Yeah, I was looking to make some type of oil investment, and RIG seems interesting in that the ESG folks are kind of, you know, quieting down. And it looks like we're going to need more oil. And right now, offshore is not a bad place to look. What do you think about RIG?
Well, even this environment with higher oil prices, their profitability metrics aren't fantastic. What this is, though, it is a high-risk play on oil prices going higher. Remember, offshore drilling is expensive. It's complex. And they have the largest deep water and ultra deep water fleet in the world. And they operate globally from West Africa to Brazil to the Gulf of Mexico. And their customers tend to be national oil companies, independents, as well as international oil companies. And so they do well when oil prices are very high. And the cost to continue with those offshore developments is worthwhile. And so it tends to move dramatically in each direction. Obviously, this was on the brink of bankruptcy during the oil crash in 2020. But now it's all the way up to $4.26. But it's still 23% off its 52-week high. Whereas a lot of oil companies are near the 52-week high. So I don't love it. I just don't love that relative strength. I want to see the companies that are at or near their 52-week high and are going to be able to earn profits and pay dividends with oil prices at reasonable levels, and that's what they're at now, and I think they will go higher. So this is just a high risk play, not the way that we're playing oil. We rather own the ones that are paying dividends, that are currently profitable, are able to buy back shares, pay down debt, etc. And RIG just isn't one of them, and frankly it's not even our favorite offshore oil driller. there are ones that better operate better long term. So I'm going to give RIG a no. I love your thinking in that sense, but I would look for either different ones in the offshore space or more of your traditional E&P companies that are paying dividends, do have modest debt loads, are buying back shares, and near the 52-week highs, not well off of them. All
right. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. Nope. No problem, Dan. Now, the seasons are changing, and especially out here in the West, dipping into the 40s overnight. And I know winter is coming. And that means more volatility into next year. Usually this time of year, markets kind of float higher. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't start preparing for 2023. This is when you start thinking about it. Do you feel like you're well set up for this new market regime? Has your strategy succeeded in this era of inflation, in this era of higher interest rates, in a deglobalizing world, in a new multipolar world? Well, if you need help deciphering that, I encourage you to reach out to myself or Steve Peasley at our company, KAPP Financial, where we practice parallel investing, which means we invest right alongside our clients, and we practice unbiased guidance. We give unbiased guidance both on and off air, and using our same philosophy, which is independent thinking and shared success. So if you want to reach out to us for a free portfolio review assessment, just go over to investtalk.com or give our office a call at 800-557-5461. We have to help you get your portfolio optimized as soon as possible. Now let's squeeze in another caller question from 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Stephen, Justin. I'm calling on a question regarding real estate and investment property. I have property that I'm thinking putting on the market, and just wondering what would be considered a small loan amount for the buyer. $500,000 or $700,000, is that considered small? The potential buyers are saying that rather than trying to get a loan, because there are so few lenders that offer that, that they want to maybe consider a seller carry back. Does that make sense? I'm not sure if I want to do that. Just want to get your thoughts and opinion on this and what would be the pros and cons. I'll be listening to the answer on your show. Thank you very much.
That sounds like they can't get approved. If they're asking for a seller carry back, it's typically because they can't get approved for the loan that they want. A small loan would be under $100,000. So, you know, if they're saying a $500,000 loan is too small and they can't, there's no lenders offering that, it means there's no lenders offering to them. Especially in this market, loan origination is down so much, and lenders and mortgage brokers are so hungry for business. I'm sure they're going to be able to service or find a loan for even small dollar amounts, $100,000, $150,000, etc. And if they can't, it's probably because the buyer can't qualify. Now, should you do the seller carry back? It depends on your risk profile. Depends on what interest rate they're going to give you. Depends on the borrower and, you know, what's the reason they can't get approved. All those are factors. So I can't say you should or shouldn't do it, but they're not... They're only asking for that because they can't get approved themselves. Now we're heading to a break, so give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
You are listening to Invest Talk. Every Friday on the program and the podcast, Steve Peasley shares highlights from the newest edition of the KPP Premium Newsletter. Listen Fridays to Invest Talk. And now, Steve and Justin welcome your calls and questions, 888-99-CHART.
Hello, this is Sean from Washington State. I've got a question for Steve or Justin about MKS Instruments. I'm using StockRow and GuruFocus to analyze this stock. All the numbers look great to me, 15% plus growth in sales, cash flow, earnings for the last 5 to 10 years, very consistent. I'm looking at a fair value of somewhere around $150, and today's price is at $84. I know a little bit about this industry. I'm in the measurement industry, so I understand some of the products that they sell, so that makes it easier to read more information about them. I'm looking to see if your numbers match what I'm looking at. Look forward to hear the answer on the podcast. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, looking at MKSI, which is MKS Instruments, and you're correct, they're in the semiconductor equipment space. They manufacture and supply instruments and components used to control and analyze gases in the manufacturing of semiconductors. And you're correct, they've had consistent growth over the last 10 years or so. The issue, though, is that now earnings are expected to drop dramatically. So last year they made $11.38 per share, which is drastically higher than pre-pandemic levels of about $4.52. But this year they're supposed to earn $9.32, down 18%, but then down another 51% next year to $4.54. And that's why the stock has dropped 62% from its high. Now, the question is, what is the right number for this, given that its earnings are mean reverting in a big way? And this is what I'm saying about the fact that there's just a lot of near-term headwinds in the semiconductor space. Not only is demand dropping because demand for physical goods is dropping, but there's also over capacity within the industry. Everybody in the industry was adding capacity because there was a chip shortage a year and a half ago. And that's all gone for the most part. And now it's just, there's too much product on the market. And companies have to dump supply and they're trying to reduce their overall production. And that's hurting companies like MKSI. So you have to look forward, and forward looking, this isn't cheap. Now, analysts are continuing to downgrade their earnings expectations for this year and next year. And so I would be looking for is revisions to the upside and waiting for those trends to shift the other way. So I like that you're looking at this company because long-term they do have good profitability metrics. Return on equity has averaged about 17% over the last 5 years, which is very solid. They do have minimal debt on their balance sheet. Actually, I'll take that back. About $4 billion in net debt. So not a low amount. So that's for a $4.5 billion market cap. So that's not super small. So that's something to consider and worry about a little bit, but not bad. So I would just be patient on it. I'd be looking for analysts to start upgrading their earnings expectations as opposed to continues to downgrade it and the technicals to improve. And the technicals just continue to get worse and worse. So if this can start getting above the 100-day moving average, then I would start to think about it. But right now, I would pass on MKSI. Now, lastly, I want to talk about banks and the banks that are doing well and the banks that aren't doing well. Now, a good example of the banks that aren't doing well are the ones that service niches that aren't doing well. For example, Silicon Valley Bank. They cater to technology and life science companies, so biotech companies, a lot of startups, and their gains from higher rates have been minimal. Why? Because those companies are burning through cash and they're not able to raise new funding, meaning their deposits are going away. But companies or banks that are more broad in the type of business they have, think of consumer banks like JP Morgan, Bank of America, and just banks in general that have broad exposure to the economy, they tend to do better. And so if you're looking at the finance industry or the banking industry, I would be looking for the types of exposures that these banks have. They have a lot of commercial real estate exposure, for example, probably not the type of banks you want to own. Okay. So I wanted to highlight that real quick, just so that you're thinking about those factors when looking at different banks. I'm Justin Klein. This completes another InvestTalk program. Steve Pisa and I thank you for tuning in. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads. You can get yours anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-2473. 5461.